Stories, fables, ghostly tales. Welcome, listeners, to your next remastered episode, mates. This time from the Black Museum with Orson Welles, aka Awesome Welles. Your title today is Prescription. Your tale contains caring for one another, loving your fellow humans, being a caretaker, and a drop of murder. Yes, when money is involved, murder is but one step away to those that can't wait. Listeners, this episode was particularly hairy, and I've taken out as much noise as I can, kept Orson's voice intact so that it keeps its lustrous deep sound that we know and love, and done my best to remove any occasional ksh sounds in some of his takes. This episode has multiple audio bites repeated and strange white noise spikes, but it's being cleaned up as much as possible just for your awesome ears. So, if there are parts that sound a little odd, I can guarantee you major audio damage was present, but it is still in great condition and would be such a waste to skip this episode. So thank you for listening, mates, and hang around after the episode for my Patreon thank you stories. Get cozy and warm, because we're about to take a tour of a museum of murder.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum, a repository of death. Here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a milk bottle, a woman's hairnet, a bit of flypaper, all are touched by murder. Here's a doctor's prescription. It's a familiar object. You don't think twice about it. You have a cold, a sore throat. The doctor comes, gives you a prescription, a piece of paper with symbol scrawled on it.
Here you are, nurse. I've used a different compound this time. Number 1778 in place of 2032.
Is this one stronger than what you've been getting?
Yes, there's a bit more of the morphia in this prescription.
Well, today that same piece of paper, that prescription, is in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. In just a moment, you will hear The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
All around represent the final distillation of that most final act of all, the taking of a human life by another human being. Here lies death, in serried, ordered ranks of things of which death is made, lie here, quiescent now that once so violent, so unavoidable, so inevitably complete. It's a stiletto, thing of cruel beauty, jewel scabbard. No blood sullied this stiletto blade ever, but this was the arrow, the pointing finger, which led to death by the hangman's rope. Yes, and here's the prescription, scrawled almost unintelligible, the traditional corkscrew of a doctor's penmanship, and marked in the chemist's writing, filled. Ironic, but true. Almost as ironic as the beginning of the story, because the beginning is an errand of affection and kindly care. John Begley was a nephew and cousin.
And so, if you don't mind, Miss Smith, I want to be certain that my aunt, she's well past 80, you see, and my cousin will have the best of care.
I understand perfectly, Mr. Begley. I've been taking care of patients in my house now for almost 5 years. I can show you letters of reference, but I prefer it if you inspected my house first. That way...
To May Smith, a routine call, a routine inspection. To John Begley, a matter of some importance, but apparently Mr. Begley was quite satisfied with what he saw.
I must say, Miss Smith, you do well by your patients.
I'm a nurse, sir, and I've dedicated myself to the proper care of the sick.
Well, to be congratulated. May I ask what the charges will be?
Your aunt is, I take it, a hopeless invalid.
And has been for a good many years. My cousin June has a progressive nervous disorder. Sometimes she's quite completely paralyzed. Then she has remissions.
Oh, I see. Would it be multiple sclerosis?
I think that's the name of it. In any case, she can care for her own needs to a great extent, except when she has these seizures.
Would £15 per week for each of them be within their means, with board and so on included?
Oh, yes, they have means. You see, my uncle, by marriage, that is, Mr. Dawson, he left them a comfortable income.
No problems there. Everything perfectly respectable and not a thought of trouble in the mind of anyone concerned. Martha Dawson and her daughter June came to stay in the care of Nurse May Smith. Not a registered nursing home, you understand, but a nice place and a competent nurse in charge of the good doctor on call, all of which was borne out the afternoon some months later when John came to visit his aunt and his cousin.
May is sweet. So considerate.
Oh, it's May already, is it?
Oh, why not, John? She's as good to me as June would be if she were able.
I wish I were able, Mother.
But you're not, poor dear. And May is a fine substitute.
One of the family, eh?
Yes, John. John?
Yes, my dear?
I'm not getting any younger.
Here, now, none of that kind of talk.
I mean it. I'm getting on. 55 is well into middle age. I've been thinking about my will, John.
As your next of kin, I think you ought to discuss it with me.
I'm serious, John.
Listen to her, John. In all probability, I shall go first. And June will have everything her father left.
All right, Aunt Martha. Go ahead, June.
Well, I've been watching May, you see. She has practically nothing of her own, except this house and a rather precarious income from her patients. I've been thinking of making her a partial heir. But since you're the main one, John, I thought I'd ask you first.
I'm doing all right, dear. No worry on that score. Only take my advice. Be sure before you leap. Money is a strange thing, you know.
June listened to her cousin John. But what she thought he was advising, well, that was something else again.
May, I'd like to talk with you.
Of course, my dear. Go right ahead.
I'm making my will over again.
Now, that's fine talk. You and the will, whatever for.
To make you my principal heir.
June, you mustn't do anything of the kind. I'm sure your nice cousin won't like it a bit.
Oh, I've discussed it with him. He doesn't mind in the least.
In any case, people with their lives ahead of them mustn't think about dying.
Then it's high time I began to think about it. June, dear, let me tell you something.
You're going to live so long and pay me £15 a week for so many years that you won't have anything to leave anybody.
That's not so. My income will take care of me as long as I live. And John certainly doesn't need the principal. You will. You see, May, I know about the real nursing home you've always wanted. And the cottages and house that are the basis of what Father left Mother and me will be just perfect for you. When the time comes,
you stop this kind of talk, June Dawson. That's nurse's orders. I don't want to hear it. I simply refuse to listen to you.
A word can be like a stone in a pool of water, the splash, the first ripple. And then wider and wider go the circles. Stone disappears, but it's there, lying at the bottom of the pool, even when the surface has become still again.
This box of candy... Johnny sent it. Will you have some?
Thank you, Mother.
Now, what shall I have? Mocha or cream?
You've had three already. You know sweets aren't really good for you.
June is right, Aunt Martha. Now, you let me have that box. I'm going to save you from temptation and keep the box in my office. And you may have a piece after dinner and one after luncheon.
each day. Oh. The way you boss me. You'd think you were twice my age instead of the other way round.
You're a good person, May. You really are.
Am I? Just because I do my job?
Yes, the care was good. And the three women obviously were very fond of each other. But did you notice the phrase, save you from temptation? Would a psychologist call that a Freudian slip of some kind, I wonder now? And who was saving whom and from what? Certainly Dr. Lewin, the attending physician, thought merely that people were being saved from pain and with conscientious care.
I've been in to see Mrs. Dawson, nurse.
I'm glad. How do you find her, doctor?
She's failing rapidly. Oh, it's too bad. She's a splendid old lady, despite her bad physical condition.
Does Miss Dawson realize her mother's condition?
I'm sure she does. She's a brave woman.
And a self-sacrificing daughter, if ever I saw one.
No question about that. Well, it must come to all of us one day. Death, I mean. Now then, have you the final reports on the terminal care for Mrs. Wrightson?
Yes, sir. Right here in the file. And for Mrs. Richter.
Thank you, nurse. You know, you really ought to qualify as a proper nursing home. You know your business, Miss Smith.
Thank you, doctor. Well, regulations are strict and expensive to fulfill. Now, on these two cases, doctor, you prescribed morphia towards the end, you remember? And you let me have a supply.
I keep the dangerous drugs in here. I have some of the tablets left. I'd like to return them, if I may.
Very well. Dangerous drug, morphia. Just as well not to have it around, even under lock and key.
A dangerous drug. Tempting. But there's another drug, or so it may be called at times, a temptation certainly. Seems to have the power to dull the perceptions and the consciences of people, much as morphia does at a time. This drug is money.
There it is. My will. Free made. Johnson. Will you sign here, please?
Yes, ma'am.
The papers were signed, put away. A will, an inheritance, a gesture from a grateful woman to a friend in need. That was all. An incident over, closed, with a period put to it as the pen stopped its scratching, as in a few weeks. A heart stopped beating.
At least she died without pain.
In her sleep, doctor. Around midnight.
How is Miss Dawson taking it?
Quite well. Would you like to see her?
Perhaps I'd better. A sedative may be indicated.
She's in her room. This way. Can I expect any reaction in June's own trouble?
A disease of the nervous system like hers? There may be some trouble now, even when she's taking this blow so well.
I know. Here we are, sir.
Ah, Miss Dawson. May I express my sympathy?
Thank you, doctor. Mother suffered enough in this world. I pray she has peace in the next.
I trust she will. Miss Smith is worried about you now.
I do feel a bit upset. I hope I'm not going to have any after effects.
Have you noticed any signs?
My legs feel so heavy. That's usually a sign.
Uh-huh.
And my fingertips on my right hand, they seem to have lost the sense touch.
Well, you just let me prescribe a sedative, my dear. With some sleep, you'll be fine. Even when we expect something like this, it's still a shock. There we are, nurse.
Thank you, doctor. Now you lie down, June. As doctor says, even when you expect something, it's still a shock.
Yes, a shock indeed. Perhaps not unconnected with a piece of paper, a prescription, which can be seen today in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with the Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. And now we continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
The words they use are polite. Terminal care. They carry many connotations. An end to pain. An easing off from weary illness. A quiet kind of death. However, they do not mean a helping hand to death.
Doctor, poor Miss Dawson doesn't seem to be getting much relief from the sedative you gave her. I'm afraid the funeral and all the details have been too much for her.
I've been expecting that. She's worse, then?
Yes. Her right side is paralyzed. Doctor, June's become more than a patient. I don't want to lose her, too.
I understand, Miss Smith. Now, don't worry about that. Chances are Miss Dawson will live for quite a few years yet. Now, in the meantime... here you are, nurse. I've used a different compound this time. Number 1778 in place of 2032.
Is this one stronger than what she's been getting?
Yes, there's a bit more of the morphia in this prescription.
Yes, let us ease the pain and relieve the suffering. This is a great career to comfort and aid the sick. One does many things to help a sufferer.
Dr. Lewin, Miss Dawson has asked a peculiar question. I don't like it.
What is it?
She wants to know how one can be cremated.
Oh, she's thinking about that, is she?
Well, she hates her body. I think she wants to feel it will be completely destroyed as soon as she is gone.
Now, can't you get her mind off this?
Well, I try. I've been spending as much time as I can with her. But she keeps coming back to that same question. I'll have to satisfy her, I'm afraid.
Well, you tell her she can put the direction in her will if she has one. Or she can leave a letter properly witnessed ordering disposal by cremation. Then, when she dies, whoever is left behind applies to the Registrar of Deaths for permission. The rest will be taken care of by a licensed mortician. Ugh! What thoughts on such a pleasant day?
She seems so terribly depressed. What can I do, Doctor?
And just do your best to keep her mind.
June Dawson, depressed, half paralyzed, and facing several years of a kind of half-life. Not pleasant. No, definitely. Cousin John Begley was very upset about it.
I don't like it, Miss Smith. June shows no improvement at all.
I'm upset by it as much as anyone.
Yes, I suppose you are.
What do you mean by that, Mr. Begley, if I may ask?
If she dies, no more £15 per week for you.
I resent that, Mr. Begley.
Yes, I suppose you should. Particularly since my cousin made that new will.
Do you know its contents?
She hasn't disclosed them to me, but I can guess. Do you know them?
I can't say I do.
Wise of my cousin to keep her will a secret, particularly since her estate will be worth at least £4,000, if not more.
A large amount of money and a small eye. Interesting combination. Of course, one can hardly blame Nurse Smith. It's not Cousin John's business what's in that will if June doesn't care to tell him. In any case, other events impend which will have a bearing on the matter.
We acted quickly. Almost as if she'd wished herself to death.
Why didn't you call me?
And it was 1 a.m. She seemed to be sleeping, except her breathing was peculiar. I tried to rouse her and she answered me. I left her at 215 Johnson, who was on the night desk this week, called me. She'd run for help and I rushed in. She still had the cord in her hand. And she was...
Well, it happens that way. Something gives up. This was a cerebral hemorrhage, as far as I can judge, without an autopsy. I'll state so on the desk.
Very well, Doctor. Oh, I feel so ineffectual at the moment. You see, she was more than a patient. She was my friend.
I understand. Now, you'll be all right in a day or so after the internment.
Oh. Oh, Doctor. She wrote a letter. Insisted on it. After I told her what you said.
What I said?
About the cremation.
Oh, that. Oh, yes, I remember. Yes, very well. You'll need the form request to fill out. I'll send one over. Now, you can make it out, attach the letter, and take it to the registrar. He happens to be the health officer in Nottingham as well.
Oh, thank you.
Now then, I'll make out the certificate.
No problems. Just the grief over a lost friend. Make out the papers. Call in Johnson, the faithful servant.
Johnson?
Yes, miss?
I have an errand for you. Dr. Lewin sent this form over. It's all filled out. I want you to take it to the health officer. You know where, don't you?
Yes, of course, miss.
And be sure you file this letter with it. Now, you remember witnessing Miss Dawson's signature on this letter, don't you?
Oh, yes, of course I do.
Johnson did as he was told. It was his job, no questions asked. However, the registrar at the health office did have a question or two.
You work at this place for this Smith woman, do you?
Yes, sir, I do.
The form here says nursing home. Is that what it is?
Oh, I suppose so, sir.
Well, don't you know?
Well, there's only a few patients, and it's Smith's own house.
Oh, one of those, I see. I thought there was no registered nursing home at that address. I happen to be in charge of those records myself.
She never called it a nursing home before, sir. She always wants one, of course. Talks about it a lot. Says it costs a lot of money.
Yes, it does.
Will it be all right for me to tell her to go ahead with things now, sir?
No, not just yet. I'll want to get confirmation of this cremation request from a relative, too, if possible. I imagine the family will claim the body. We'll tell your employer we'll be in touch with her.
Strange, isn't it? An ambition, a desire so near fulfillment. And Nurse Smith fills out an official form as if the ambition had already been fulfilled. Two words. Wheels begin to turn. Nurse Smith has an unexpected caller.
You wanted to see me, sir?
Yes. My name is Liggett, Inspector Liggett, Scotland Yard.
Sit down, please, Inspector.
Thank you.
What can I do for you, Inspector?
Did you know there's been a post-mortem on Miss June Dawson?
No, I didn't. Who gave permission?
Her next of kin, John Begley.
Oh.
You know him?
He's been a visitor here.
I see. The death certificate said cerebral hemorrhage.
Dr. Lewin told me.
Would you tell me the type of medication you gave the patient?
I have the record book right here. Yes, here it is. Patient in pain in afternoon. Gave two tablets as prescribed by Dr. Lewin, 4 p.m. And here's the 8 p.m. entry. Usual dosage of sedative.
What was in those tablets?
Morphia. Dr. Lewin left them with me. 2 on September the 5th, 4 more on September the 12th. You'll find the entries in my drug book.
And in the sedative?
There was morphine in that, too. Dr. Lewin had prescribed an additional dose. He'd increased the compound.
You seem to have all the facts.
I keep careful records.
But nevertheless, Miss Dawson died quite unexpectedly of a stroke.
So the doctor certified. That is not in my province.
No. And the doctor made out the certificate without an autopsy.
He's quite a competent physician.
No doubt. But the fact remains that Miss Dawson did not die of a stroke, Miss Smith.
No? May I ask?
She died of an overdose of morphia. Quite a large overdose. So I'm afraid we shall have to take you in charge until further investigations have either cleared you or brought you to trial either for manslaughter or homicide.
When death masquerades as mercy, when murder hides behind friendship, there's little sympathy for the accused. In this case, where one required to heal stood accused of killing, there was only anger. Nonetheless, justice was well ordered and the evidence was made quite clear. First, the motive.
Mr. Begley, what do you know of the occasion of your cousin's drawing up a new will in favor of the prisoner?
My cousin discussed it with me.
What did she tell you?
That she felt so grateful to Miss Smith that she wanted to leave her entire estate to this woman.
What is the amount of the estate? To the best of your knowledge, did the prisoner know the size of the bequest?
I told her myself.
On what occasion?
When I asked if she knew the contents of my cousin's will.
What did you say to that?
That she did not know. At a subsequent visit with my cousin, I learned that she did know. In fact, her own assistant or helper witnessed the document.
Thank you very much, sir.
And finally, opportunity and access to the drug. Dr. Lewin, a tragic though innocent figure in the case, was the witness.
Doctor, it has been alleged that you gave the prisoner 2 tablets of morphia for the deceased on the 5th of September and 4 more on the 12th. Is this true?
It is not. I never prescribed morphia in that form for this patient.
Did you prescribe it in any other form?
In a sedative, yes. I must confess a slight error, however. The patient had been receiving compound 1778. I later prescribed compound 2032, thinking at the moment that it contained more of the drug than 1778. Later, I discovered it contained less. However, as it seemed to be equally easing to the patient, I did not correct the situation.
Were you urged to add to the morphia?
I was, by Miss Smith.
Have you any idea where the prisoner may have acquired the drug which was used?
During the past year, I have given her small quantities of the drug for use at her discretion, but never more than 8 tablets at a time. She has returned a few from time to time. On checking my records, I find I have given her almost 100 tablets.
Is this normal?
In the situation where terminal care is the norm, yes. However, it is perfectly possible that some of the unused tablets were not returned to me.
Now, returning to your prescription, Doctor, do you remember the occasion of your writing it, and why?
I do. It was just after the patient's mother died while under Miss Smith's care. Miss Smith was most anxious for a stronger sedative for the patient, and inquired specifically concerning its comparative strength after I wrote the prescription. She also inquired of me concerning cremation.
The Crown rested its case. The sentence was death by hanging. Well, today that same piece of paper, that prescription, is in the Black Museum. And now, until next time, till we meet again in the same place, and I tell you another story of the Black Museum, I remain as always, obediently yours.
Yep, I'm not surprised here how this story turned out. A little bit of money to completely corrupt a previously loving and caring friend. Goodness, she turned fast. I mean, she was dying. I guess she just hastened the process. Excuses and reasons for a murderer. And one that brought the hangman to a door a-knockin'. Hope you enjoyed this episode, mates. And a shout out to Dolphin and Cow for the useful feedback you provided for a previous Black Museum episode. That really helped me understand what was working and what wasn't working. So thanks a lot, mate. Now, for my Patreons. People who get up in the morning with what I can only assume is some kind of golden ray of light, and at some point decided to spread that light to this podcast in the form of a monthly donation. So, as always, these stories are for my living legends. My Patreon supporters. Starting with my old Night Tea Titans. Maya, the Envelope Assassin. In a little street of the city Buntoon lives a widow quite unknown to her neighbours. They know not her name, nor her age, only that she lives alone and keeps to herself. As the years progressed, she became even more frail than ever before, and her neighbours deemed her to have passed away. These same neighbours decided to call the authorities after not seeing her out of her house for 2 weeks. They weren't friendly or on a first-name basis with her, but being old and by herself warrants some pity and some interest. The police were about to snap off the lock and break in, when they realized it was already unlocked and slightly ajar. As they entered the room, the neighbors following closely behind, wondering if at first they had been mistaken, and the police, not knowing what to expect, simply let them join them in their investigation, rightly or wrongly, as they had no intention of finding anything other than the woman being alive or dead, and their neighbours present to identify the body would be a bonus. What they found was a large room, candlelit, and a body, stacked next to a huge pile of envelopes. Strange, sure, but not entirely suspicious. until the neighbor picked up an envelope to inspect it. Then to suddenly retch, discard the envelope, and gasped for air, clawing at their chest as if to let air in. Then, as quickly as they began gasping, they fell dead to the ground. Needless to say, the room was cornered off and completely isolated. No one knew her name or what this room was for, but her envelopes were titled and addressed to key council members around different cities, with the obvious aim now to assassinate on contact. Consequently, her moniker in death became the Envelope Assassin. Solstra, licorice-laced lobelia. As a street urchin, Lisa was a sprightly young girl, prancing around and having a wonderful time with her friends and enjoying the going-ons of her community. The people there really did love her. Sure, she was an urchin, homeless and penniless. She would do chores, send letters to people, and be a stand-up citizen within her community. As she grew older, she took on larger jobs, ones that required her to run from one location to another. One of her routine deliveries was picking up confectionery at her local warehouse to deliver to the store, pulling it in a wheelbarrow for about 15 to 20 minute walks. He gave her money and a sense of worth, until the town she lived in one day was empty. Well, empty of life, it seemed, to Lisa. You see, she had made her routine delivery of licorice to a community from the shop Hoppenscotch Candies, and used the same wheelbarrow to transport Upton Dupton Pharmaceuticals, chemical-grade gear, transporting clear glass tubes with a smelly fragrance to them. She didn't know what was in them and didn't care. She had a job to do. Little did she realize, though, that one of those vials was chipped, leaking into the wood and sheets that covered the goods. Unknowingly, the liquid was absorbed into the sheet of cloth, only to be placed directly onto the licorice on return transport. That liquid was pure lobelia concentrate. And boy, does that stuff have some dire consequences when ingested. People had emptied their stomachs, and almost their soul, once consuming the town's licorice in a large festival that day. And not having enough time to try the candy herself, Lisa dodged a poisonous confectionery bullet. After realizing that something was wrong and not what exactly, she was able to reach out to the surrounding towns for help. Lisa explained that the town became ill, but not knowing why. Finding upon investigating the town, there were some survivors, and people had indeed started recovering. Despite the first appearance of the town being void of life, they had just been exhausted by the poison's power to induce chronic vomiting, and were resting peacefully, which Lisa mistakenly thought was death. To this day, no one knows exactly what went wrong. But Upton Dupton Pharmaceuticals has changed their packaging. Mates, thank you both for your amazing support. Yep, the theme is obvious today. Poison. Knowing and unknowing. I wanted to spread the acidic nature of these chemicals from today's story into your own. I hope you enjoyed them, both of you. And thank you so much for your jaw-dropping support. It means the world to me. I know I say thank you a lot, but seriously, you both put a pep in my step. Thanks. Next up, my wicked white tea warlords. I own cows, Hellebore Heifer. Mr. Cows is a specialist killer, not an assassinator of individuals exactly, although he has done that in the past. Mr. Cows is more like a chaos creator with a touch of death and murder thrown in. When you need an assassin to handle killings discreetly, in a way that is difficult to trace, and buys them time to walk away without a clue, or shred of damning evidence, you bring in Mr. Cows, and his unique Hellebore Heifer. As you may have guessed, Hellebore is Mr. Cows' weapon of choice, and he finds so many, many uses, from spiking drinks of his targets for months to induce fatigue or chronic depression, to inducing uncontrollable drooling by upper-class officials during a speech. Mr. Cows finds a way to insert the liquid Hellebore into some part of his target's daily routine. A careful orchestration of timing and expertise in investigation. Over 6 months, he's fed his prized cows Hellebore, and bit by bit, the cows were able to absorb it and show no ill signs. Each month passed, and each month Hellebore built up in their system, lingering around in their lipids. Posing as a distributor, he sold his cows to the town of Richart, using his connections to ensure these cows reach the right location in the food chain. namely having them ready for the upper-class banquet that would host over 200 of the top most successful business people and political heavyweights in the country. The cows hit their mark, and two hungry guests were slowly paralyzed over the course of the night, and by the time the guests had realized what was taking place, the heliport had slowed down their heart rate completely, and they began suffocating to death. Hellebore has a bitter taste, but heavily masked by spices, slow-cooked tender beef, and a mixture of Mr. Cow's own combination led to a mass assassination like no other. Lee Bauer, Detective Belladonna. Detective Belladonna is praised for his good looks and charm. The ladies love him, and the guys begrudgingly respect him, envious of his style, demeanor, and ability to close cases fast. But this detective isn't all wits and charm. He's a killer. Yes, a murderer and monster hunter. His idea of a solved case is one that has them not behind bars, but 6 feet under. And he's no fool. He knows that he can't go around killing all those that he imprisons. But he does it slowly, over a set period of time. And if he's low-key enough, he alters the documents that say that he took the prisoner in, to avoid any wise-cracking cops picking up the scent of his trail. His favorite means of killing is poison, whether it's poisonous powder in the soles of their shoes, poisonous splinters in a loose log they scrape past, a small spiked ball bearing that he scratches them with whilst walking past. He finds a way to entrap his prey and deliver that dose of death, whether they realize it or not. Working in the underworld as well as a double agent gives him access to these poisons and puts him front and center as one of the most effective assassins in the area. He saves his most personal poison for those that he hates. The old-fashioned nightshade, a poison that attacks your nerve endings, paralyzing them, blurs your vision, causing involuntary muscle contractions, and of course, death. One that Detective Belladonna watches step by step, savoring every single stage of death. The Bureau don't know that the very person they're tracking down is watching over their shoulder every step of the way. Mates, thank you both for your support. I get to read out stories and write these tales every second weekday thanks to you and my Ode Night to Titans. It is such a special treat for me to know that people like you are out there supporting this show. So thank you so, so much, both of you. Now, for my fabulous Earl Grey enforcers. Chad Warren, Just Heather, Lorraine Crisanto, Paige Marcini, Peter Raffelli, Tasha Moncrief, Christina Boyd, Divided by Zero, Tristan Cassidy, and Dolphin and Cow. Thank all of my supporters for being the blood in my veins. If you think you'd be able to support this show, thinking to yourself, yeah, I can spare a couple of dollary dues per month, swing on by my Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/sfgt. There's a link at the top of this episode's show notes. If you get a chance to check it out, that would be awesome. And thank you all for listening. Have a great Monday, and join me Wednesday for either Dracula or something very different. Take it easy, my kick-ass listeners, and as always, till next we meet.